In 1969, Creedence Clearwater Revival pulled off a musical trifecta. Led by songwriter, singer, and lead guitarist John Fogerty, Creedence Clearwater Revival released 3 million-selling hit albums, Bayou Country, their second, Green River, and Willie and the Poor Boys, all in the calendar year 1969. That's a feat that's never been equaled, and I doubt seriously if it ever will. The first of the three, Bayou Country, was released in January that year and is, quote, a superb statement of purpose that captures Creedence Clearwater Revival's muscular, spare, deceptively simple sound as an evocative portrait of America, writes Stephen Thomas Erlewine in the All Music Guide. It turns out that as an adolescent, CCR creative genius John Fogerty had made a solemn promise to himself to master the electric guitar like his heroes.
Well, I took a look at people like Chet Atkins, Duane Eddy, James Burton, who was playing then with... the first thing he did I loved, but I didn't know it was him. It was on a record called Susie Q by Dale Hawkins.
Uh-huh.
I only found out years later that was James. I went, oh, my goodness. I mean, he was like 15 years old at the time.
Really?
And bending strings all over the place even then. I guess a little bit later, people like Roy Nichols, who played with Merle Haggard, Don Rich with Buck Owens. You know, these were guys who were really great on the guitar, really great guitar players. And when I was about 14, I had made it up... I had decided in my mind that I wanted to grow up and be like that. In other words, when I was younger, I was just sort of walking around the house singing and going doo-wop. And in fact, I named my first imaginary group Johnny Corvette and the Corvettes.
Ooh, I like that.
Guess who Johnny was? Yeah. Well, this was 1953. I was about 8 years old, and that was the first year of the Corvette, which was and is an awesome American sports car. in fact, I have one of those now.
What year?
Mine's an 87. I finally got one. I waited all those years. But anyway, by the time I was 14, I realized I wanted to be a guitar player and a good one. And the guys I have mentioned, especially Chet and James Burton, were like masters of the field they were in. You know, Chet wasn't much rock and roll, but he was eloquent, just, you know, great stuff. And James was just smoking rock and roll stuff, and a little bit later, the country and all that string bending. And I wanted to be like that. That's what I promised myself that I would become.
Away you.
Not unlike the late George Harrison of the Beatles, John Fogerty feels that the sudden pop stardom with Creedence Clearwater Revival back then, so early in John's career, had a stunting effect on Fogerty's growth as a guitarist.
Unfortunately, then somewhere around the age of 18 or 19, at when my songwriting really started to get better, I get more better, I became famous with Creedence Clearwater, and my guitar chops kind of just froze right where they were. I really, you know, I was rock and roll good, but I wasn't really, really good like I had promised myself. It's kind of like the old joke. I was 30 years old before I found out I had no talent, but it was too late. I was already famous. So I was kind of frozen in, you know, what I was doing with Creedence, which was nice, hummable stuff. You know, my guitar playing, you could always hum the leads. It was never any knock 'em dead kind of stuff like James Burton. It was just, you know, it's good. I mean, there's times when you ought to just shut up and play nicely. But I wanted to be that other guy too. And it's only been the last few years that I've started to just get into the footsteps, let's say, of a James Burton. Of course, I'm getting where he was 30 years ago, so I have a long way to go.
Thank you. John, with all seriousness, with the possible exception of Robbie Robertson, who's Canadian, no one in contemporary music has written so often, so well, about rural Southern culture. So how did your outsider's perspective, like Robertson's, help you see the cross-cultural uniqueness of the South?
To say it simply, it's not something I think about. Other than, you know, it's been pointed out to me a lot that I'm Southern a lot, and of course I didn't grow up in the South. And all I can say is that rock and roll itself was very, very Southern in its beginnings. And, you know, I've gone most years to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony and induction and all that. And the very first year was a class of 10, and of course, including Elvis and Fats Domino and Jerry Lee and some others. Well, 10 people, actually. Some were alive, you know, and some were on poster. And I stood there, and as I counted, I knew that 9 of them were from the South. The only guy I wasn't sure about was Sam Cooke, and I learned later that he was indeed from the South. And I rest my case. I mean, I stood there in 1986 looking at that class, the first class, the first really major people from rock and roll, and that was what was in my mind. I said, you know, this is a pretty Southern thing here, and I can testify about everybody there except one, and I later confirmed Sam Cooke, too. So all 10, you know, rock and roll is just a Southern thing. I started paying attention to that in the very beginning.
Son, don't let the man get you and do what it
song Born on the Bayou, which leads off the second Creedence Clearwater Revival album called Bayou Country, hooked me.
Rock and roll is just a Southern thing. I started paying attention to that in the very beginning. And I think later that spilled over into the other things in my life, especially entertainment things, meaning that since music was so important to me and this stuff was the most important, I would hang on to movies like, let's say, Tennessee Williams stuff, or remember that old movie, The Defiant Ones, Tony Curtis and Sidney. I don't know where it occurred, but I'm sure it was the South if they had a chain gang and all that, you know.
To Kill a Mockingbird?
I was just real intrigued with those kind of things, but I didn't sit around and really exclude it from other parts of life or notice it in a more, I didn't know I was noticing it specially. I just thought that was normal. That's what I, you know, paid attention to. It's only now, many years after Proud Mary, let's say, that people sort of point out that it's a little odd that you'd never been to the Mississippi River, but you wrote about it.
The fact that this area, geographically, is not that big a place, is it?
Oh, no, especially if you go down to the Mississippi Delta. Because I read The Day Christ Died, I think, by James Bishop, probably when I was in the 10th grade or something. Which, of course, is about the Holy Land, too. And the on the first page, he points out that the Holy Land is a very small place. I think you could walk it in a few days. I noticed a similarity about the Delta, that it was really a tiny area of the world to be so important in our American culture and therefore all over the world.
Rocketed to number 2 on the U.S. chart and became Creedence Clearwater Revival's first million-selling single, while the Bayou Country album peaked at number 7. Follow In the Studio on Facebook at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and you can find a whole lot more from John Fogerty and Creedence Clearwater Revival here at InTheStudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with John Fogerty for Bayou Country from Creedence Clearwater Revival. Amazingly, 20 long years would pass before John Fogerty would admit to himself that CCR's incredible success at that tender age had sidetracked his firsthand knowledge of the region about which he'd written so often.
Well, I'm not sure you always know what's missing. You just know that something's missing. I had the vague feeling that, that you talked about the 14-year-old boy promising himself to grow up and be a great musician, a guitar player specifically. I began to have more and more the sense that I was not. And, unless I'm going to be reincarnated or in some other parapsychological way, get to come back here and, get to come back as James Burton, it was time for me to get my act in gear, I guess. But I didn't know it all that clearly. I'm saying this now. I at the time, this is about 1989, 88 even, I started having this longing or an urge to go to Mississippi, but I didn't have a clue why. And it's the weirdest feeling when something is pushing you to go someplace. And, we all have our own lives and busy lives, and we have commitments and that sort of thing. And it just seemed like too much trouble. Why do you want to go do that? So I kept putting off the feeling because it didn't make any sense to me. And later I've used the kind of the picture of the guy in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where he's making the mashed potatoes on the table and it getting this high and he's going boo doo doo boo doo, and he doesn't have a clue. And of course everybody in the neighborhood thinks he is stone out of his mind. That's how I felt. And finally the urge was too strong. Now remember, I've never been in Mississippi, even though I've written, some of these southern songs, as you say. I didn't even know where to go. I mean, I just felt like I had to go find the Delta because I'd heard about that all my life. But I think about it. If you've never been there, what do you put a backpack on you, on your back and get on a bicycle and go somewhere?
Hi.
The song Bootleg from Creedence Clearwater Revival's Bayou Country in 1969. So as improbable as it seems, Creedence songwriter, singer, guitarist John Fogerty was not born in the Bayou or anywhere else even close, and he stayed away from the American South until a full 20 years after these three albums defined his sound.
So I actually went to New Orleans the first time and went across the bridge, across the Mississippi, and came up from the southern Mississippi, which is really the wrong way to approach this for any of you that are contemplating such a trip. Anyhow,
water flows down, doesn't
it's
it?
More better, yeah, to go, come from Memphis. This is, after a few trips, I finally figured out this is why Memphis plays such a big part in the Mississippi blues syndrome and in American rock and roll and blues, too. It's because that's really the first big city that you hit coming north from out of Mississippi. It's where everybody would stop, and some, of course, stayed there. So I took the first trip, kind of meandered and didn't know where I was, why I was there, and ended up in Hattiesburg. And that was really not really the Delta. And it was, you know, 4 or 5 days had passed. I finally, you know, my wife was waiting for me at home, so I came home. But I vowed to go back and kind of get it right the next time. I ended up doing 5 or 6 trips, something like that. And I got pretty good at it after a while. I had this whole, you know, a couple of knapsacks or suitcases.
Carpet bag.
Well, whatever. No, please. I wasn't selling no insurance.
Okay.
And I, you know, notebooks and tape recorders and finally records and cassettes that I could play in the rent-a-car and eventually a camera. I took hundreds of pictures, and I'm not in a one of them, you know. I've got a lot of pictures of snakes and turtles crossing the road and water towers with every little town's name on them. You know, I mean, it's great stuff to me. I've made several albums. Muddy Waters House when it was still there.
Studio thanking my guest John Fogerty. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2014, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter. And you can find out a whole lot more in the studio.net.